Monday morning you showed up fine. Good morning, NFL fans. Welcome to another episode of Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. It is our final episode of the regular season in 2013, the second season of Monday Morning Huddle, which is really exciting. Just like Week 17 was. It's been a crazy year in the NFL. So many memorable moments. Questionable calls and situations that I've never seen in football. I think a lot of fans have never seen in football. And we had crazy playoff scenarios with 18 teams still alive for week 17, six of them going to be eliminated at some point this weekend. So we're going to go into all of that, diving into right away the must win or go home games. Must win scenarios in the NFC. There were two of those with the Eagles and Cowboys both having a chance to win the NFC East in a game that was Sunday night. The Eagles coming out with a big win, and the Packers, Aaron Rodgers, and don't forget Randall Cobb return for the Pack, and they go on the road, which is what the Eagles did as well, on the road in Dallas. Green Bay on the road in Chicago, they get a win over their division rival for the NFC North. That's the two games in our opening segment that we'll be going over. In the second segment, we flip over to the AFC and walk through what happened in the wild card scenario, the sixth seed, four teams vying for it. The perfect scenario, perfect scenario for the NFL where the four teams, all of them needed help. So it just made for really interesting scenarios. And the two most likely teams seemed like going into the day, the two most likely teams to capture it, Miami and Baltimore, lose and eliminate themselves, really. But with the Steelers winning, that essentially clinched or didn't clinch a playoff spot for Baltimore and Miami. I don't want to say the Steelers eliminated them, because obviously the Bengals and Jets really eliminated the Dolphins and Ravens, but the Steelers win clinches the elimination, if that even makes sense. But the Chargers playing at 4 o'clock ultimately win an overtime thriller against the Chiefs, and they get the 6th seed. We go into that in more detail in the second segment. And then in the fourth and long segment, so much to cover. I mean, more to recap here on week 17. Then, of course, next week, we only have a show a week. So before the next show, we will have four playoff games. So we want to kind of preview that a little bit. But we'll get into the Chiefs and what they did to prepare for their game next week against the Colts, sitting their starters on Sunday. The Saints, they sneak into the playoffs as the sixth seed in the NFC. Are they happy to be playing the Eagles? Three of the four teams on the road perhaps be favored in the games next week. And we've already had the first firing of a head coach this offseason. So Black, this recording, of course, of the show is late Sunday night, early Monday morning, so not all the firings are out as of, I'm sure, the release of the podcast. More to come, but there has been one firing already, of course, in addition to the Gary Kubiak firing, which was several weeks ago. But let's get into the leading story here. The headline, really, that's going to be in the Dallas papers on Monday morning. Kyle Orton throws a pick inside of 2 minutes on what could have been the winning drive for the Dallas Cowboys. They were trailing by two, 24-22. They got the ball back after forcing the Eagles to a three and out, one timeout remaining, and they, you know, the game is really in the hands of the backup quarterback Kyle Orton, and who played a really good game, by the way. But he throws probably his worst pass of the night, picked off by the rookie cornerback for the Philadelphia Eagles, Brandon Boykin, who received a lot of praise on Sunday night from Chris Collinsworth, and rightfully so. I mean, he's been really dynamite for that Eagles defense that's gotten better every single week. I mean, people have criticized the Eagles for not being able to play defense, and it's they rely so heavily on their offense. Obviously, they're an offensive team with all their weapons, but their defense has gotten better every single week. The thing to me here is this another failure for Dallas. You know, I know that's really everyone's story out of this game, and the Eagles won it. You know, I want to give credit to the Eagles where credit is deserved. They play a very nice game, and I think people really underestimated what you would get out of the Cowboys in this one. Everyone kind of saying that the Dallas didn't have a chance without Tony Romo, but you know, the Eagles had to go on the road, play a division rival. Kyle Orton, I mean, he's past his prime, but still a very serviceable backup, and he played well in this game. I think Dallas knew that they're going to have to put the game in the hands of DeMarco Murray. And at the beginning of this game, they did that. And Murray really had a great start. But I'm really surprised now, looking back at the box score, that Murray only ended up with 51 yards on 17 carries. So an average of 3 yards per attempt. He was involved in the passing game a little bit, and he got 5 catches for 39 yards. But it's just another example of where Dallas got away from their running game in the second half. I mean, they had Kyle Orton drop back 46 times in this game. 46 times from a backup quarterback. He completed 30 of those passes for 358 yards. He had a good game. 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. I'd argue the first pick was not his fault. Jason Witten should have made that catch, although the pass wasn't completely accurate. It was a little bit behind him, but not a play that you expect your Pro Bowl tight end to make. And Witten did not, batting it up in the air. So Orton played a very nice game. I just don't see why you want Orton throwing that many times. And it's not like Dallas was behind in this game. Let me rephrase that. They were behind, but it wasn't like they were coming back from a 21-point deficit or anything like that. There's no reason why in the second, third quarter, really the third quarter in the second half, where Dallas had to break away from what should have been their game plan and getting the ball to DeMarco Murray as much as possible. And they didn't get it in the hands of Dez Bryant enough, I felt. He did have 8 catches for 99 yards, and he had that big touchdown at the end that pulled them within 2 points with 4 minutes to go. But other than that, I mean, like I said, with Boykin, the rookie, who guarded him most of the game, he had a very nice game guarding Bryant and pretty much bottled him up for the most part. I mean, a decent day statistically, but with an elimination game like this and a backup quarterback, you need more big plays from your number one wide receiver. But I think really what you need to look back at and point to why Dallas lost this game, you can argue about play calling. You can argue that it was the turnovers. They had 3 of them this game. One of them was from Murray early in the game, the first drive where Dallas had something going, and he Murray immediately coughs it up when they get into Eagles territory, which, destroyed any momentum they had going at the beginning of the game. Orton's 2 picks. You can point to those turnovers. But in the third quarter, when Dallas really had a shot to take control of this game, they forced Philadelphia to a 3-and-out to start the half. They got the ball, drove down, and got a field goal to bring it within 17-13. And then they got the one turnover that the Cowboys were able to force in this game right after that. And all the momentum was seemingly in the Dallas corner halfway through the third quarter. And on 3 plays on that drive, the Cowboys gain a whopping 3 yards. And I would argue probably one of the – although, again, I think Orton played well, I did not agree with that pass that he threw on 3rd and – I believe it was 3rd and 8 or 3rd and 9 situation. You need to get a first down there. And that was one of the completions he had to DeMarco Murray. Dropped it off to him and was hoping Murray would break 2 or 3 tackles and gain 8 or 9 yards. It just wasn't going to happen. I mean, I think it was a 2 or 3 yard gain and they settled for 3, which made it 17-16. Yeah, that's great. you're in the game with a backup quarterback. I know that's fantastic. No one expected that. But that was really when Dallas could have grabbed the game by the horns. And at that point, it seemed like the momentum, because the Eagles stopped the Cowboys and held them to a field goal, it just seemed like all the momentum was back into the Eagles' corner on the Eagles' sideline. And it really was for most of the game. It seemed like Philadelphia was dominating the game most of the time, and that was really the one point where it was like, wow, Dallas has a shot here to take this game. And that was, I think, really the drive that you can go back to and point out. Obviously, the interception at the end is costly, all the turnovers, and I think DeMarco Murray, again, not getting the ball. But that, to me, those three plays, that series, if you're going to point to any of them during the game, was the most costly for the Cowboys. So going forward, I mean, Dallas has a lot of choices and decisions to make this offseason. Does Monty Kiffin, does he come back and is he the defensive coordinator again next year? Does Jason Garrett come back and is he the head coach? Do any of the coaching staff get a break because they didn't have Tony Romo in this game? Would he have made a difference? All questions that really need to be asked. I think at the end of the day, though, Dallas had a chance to win this game, and they didn't. It doesn't really matter who was playing. They lost the game, and for the third straight year, lost in the last week of the season in a must-win game to a division opponent and finished the season 8-8. Ultimately, very disappointing. Not saying that means Garrett should be fired, but very disappointing for the Cowboys and Jerry Jones. For the Eagles, though, again, I want to say that they should receive all the credit for winning this one. I know the media is going to spin it that Dallas lost. Philadelphia won this game, and they deserve to go to the playoffs, winning 7 of their last 8 games. And I'm very intrigued by the matchup with the Saints next weekend, which we'll get into a little bit later in the show. But I think for the first time, I really have seen a weakness in Nick Foles' game. You know, he's been Superman out there. He's wearing a cape, not turning the ball over, taking care of it, and finding the open guy and getting the ball into the hands of LeSean McCoy and DeSean Jackson and throwing an amazing amount of touchdowns. I mean, his stats are off the charts. And in a normal season without a Peyton Manning in the league, he would be a very good candidate for MVP, even though he only played half the season. But I think the Cowboys really got to him and perhaps laid a blueprint for how to get Nick Foles out of rhythm come playoff time. They got pressure on him, and if you're able to cover his first read, if you can figure out who his first read is, that's the first issue. But on a lot of plays, the Cowboys had DeSean Jackson bottled up. That he wanted, Foles wanted to get the ball to Jackson on a screenplay or something like that. His first read not there. Foles, because there's pressure, he takes his eyes off of the field. They're not downfield. They're concentrated on avoiding a sack. And ultimately, I think that leads to more sacks. I think he's so concentrated on not throwing interceptions, which is really important and smart for a young quarterback. But he loses track of where he's going downfield with his eyes after his first read is not available. And that leads to sacks, and it actually led to the one fumble in this game. So the Saints, I think their game plan has got to be figure out who his first read is on certain plays and certain formations. That's going to be very difficult. But if you can study some film, do that. And if you're able to put some pressure on him after his first read isn't open, you could possibly create some havoc and force the young rookie into some mistakes. That, to me, could be the one thing that I would be worried about if I was an Eagles fan. But ultimately, I think Philadelphia is so psyched to be back in the playoffs. I mean, after the last 2 years, the dream team, all that stuff that they went through with Andy Reid and Michael Vick and company, new quarterback, new head coach, and it only took 1 year to return back to the playoffs. Congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles. So there was another elimination game In the NFC, winner take all in Chicago between the Packers and Bears. This one was a really exciting one as well. Packers ended up on top 33-28. Just, I think of all of the losses on Sunday and all the eliminations, like I said, there were six teams that were ultimately alive that got eliminated on Sunday. I think Chicago's loss was the most painful in that they had the lead. It was fourth and 10 from midfield up 28-27. They were ahead because Green Bay did not go for two and elected to kick an extra point in earlier in the fourth quarter. And with 38 seconds left on that fourth down, Aaron Rodgers finds a wide open Randall Cobb for a 48-yard touchdown, and the Packers win at Soldier Field. Just the guy that was covering Randall Cobb on that play thought that he would just go for a short out route, was covering the area around the first down line, and Cobb just ran right past him, wide open for a long touchdown. And Aaron Rodgers was able to avoid a rush from Julius Peppers. John Kuhn had a big block, chip block, that was able to buy Rodgers enough time to find Cobb down the field. I mean, it was a great play overall. All those three things had to go right for the Packers on the play to even get a first down, or their season's probably over. And they were able to score on the play and hold off what any rally the Bears could have had on the last drive. So the big story here, I mean, Aaron Rodgers returning, he did look a little rusty. I mean, he was 25 for 39. He did have 300 yards passing, two touchdowns, both to Randall Cobb, who also returned, who only had two catches in the game for 55 yards and two touchdowns. Only was targeted two times, those two touchdown passes. But Rodgers also had two interceptions and was sacked three times. So a little bit rusty. I mean, it's to be expected. But he played well enough to win, obviously, because they won the game. And they get a home playoff game next week against the 49ers, a team that Green Bay has really had some trouble in playing against the last few years. I mean, I think they've lost the last three games against the 49ers, all three of those games coming in the last two seasons, two of them last year. And once again, this year, they're going to play them twice. So Green Bay would love to knock off the 49ers after the last three losses to them. Two of those three losses have been on the road for the Packers, so I think they are happy to be at home at Lambeau Field, even though San Francisco had a better record, a much better record, because the division winner, it's going to be in Green Bay. And watching this game, even though, I mean, Green Bay's defense has struggled, and it's been a rough season for Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers, just watching this game, I couldn't help but think, man, how good could the Packers have been if they had Rodgers all season? I mean, Eddie Lacy has established himself as a legit number one running back, power back. Didn't have a great game, which was surprising because the Bears' rushing defense is awful. I think Lacy still struggling a little bit with his ankle. James Starks had a really good day. 11 carries for him, 88 yards. Lacy, much more average, below average, 21 carries, 66 yards. So I think the Packers are maybe holding Lacy back, although they did give him 21 attempts. Maybe they're hoping that Lacy can be more fresh for next week. That's why they didn't, you know, bring those attempts up way, way too high and ran Starks quite a bit. And Starks was effective. You can't count on that kind of production against the 49ers. But the fact that the Packers are not a one-dimensional team anymore on offense just makes them so much more dangerous, which has been their issue since winning the Super Bowl in 2011, 2012, early exits in the playoffs. Their issue has been running the ball and their inability to do so. Aaron Rodgers is going to get better week to week from this injury as long as the Packers advance. So I don't think you have to worry about that. The defense, it is what it is for Green Bay at this point. I think just the offense, the way it's been much more balanced, I think they're going to give the 49ers a game. I really do. I don't expect Green Bay to win. I think it would have been a lot more interesting if Green Bay was playing New Orleans. I mean, I like the matchup with the Saints-Eagles, but I would be much more tempted to pick the Packers against the Saints, especially being in Lambeau, than the 49ers at Lambeau. Because the 49ers are used to playing in the cold and outside. I think the 49ers are built to play outside in the cold in January. So it would have been a much bigger advantage for the Packers to play the Saints. But with the 49ers coming to town, I like the Packers to make it a game, but I'm not going to end up picking the Packers. For the Bears, it's really similar to what's going on in Dallas right now. I mean, it's been several years in a row where they have a decent team. They have some really good talent, and they're unable to close out the month of December with wins. I mean, last year they started 7-1 and collapsed. And this year, they were lying in the weeds really midway through the season. And then when Aaron Rodgers went down, you thought that Detroit or Chicago would come up and seize this division. It never happened. It never happened. I mean, you can't lose games like last week against the Eagles and expect to win. I mean, looking back now over Chicago's season, they lost to St. Louis on the road. They lost to Minnesota on the road. Those are games you have to win if you're going to be a playoff team. And come to think of it, the way Detroit finished the season, they should have beat Detroit at the beginning of November at home. You know, that's another game that Chicago should point to that they should have won. And actually, they got swept by Detroit. Detroit won both games. So the fact that they lost so many of those winnable games, I think you got to point to that. And yeah, this loss is heartbreaking for the Bears. But the season should not have come down to this. Should not have come down to a winner take all against Green Bay in the last week with Aaron Rodgers returning. I mean, that was just a nightmare for Bears fans. Even though they didn't want to admit it, they shouldn't have been in that situation. They should have been able to beat a St. Louis team or a Minnesota team or a Detroit team once in order to have just a one-game advantage. I mean, 9-7 would have got it done. 9-7 would have got it done. I mean, Green Bay won the division at 8-7-1. So, kind of same old story. And the Bears have made a coaching change. So, I don't see them making another coaching change. The Cowboys could. I don't see the Bears doing it because they just did. So, we'll see where they go from here. There could be some changes on defense because that defense, like I said, last in the league in rushing defense. And actually gave up the most points in Bears franchise history for a season. So could see some major changes on the defense. And we'll see, of course, where they go with quarterback. Jay Cutler, a free agent. I expect him to be back. From my Bears sources, a.k.a. Tom Pollen. I expect that the Bears will be back. It's going to be interesting because of the way Josh McCown played. A contract situation. I mean, Cutler is not going to be able to command a lot of money, not like a Joe Flacco's type money because of the way the season ended for him. But we'll see. We'll see where it goes. Definitely interesting off seasons to come in Dallas and Chicago. Okay, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back, flip over to the AFC, and talk wildcard race. Welcome back to Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. Please get a hold of me during the week on Twitter, DM, HOLCOMB, or you can send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the show, or just send a comment about football. We can have a discussion. Maybe I'll even give you a shout-out on the show next week if the comment is worthy of that. So, find me on those social media places. You can also find us on Facebook too. Dave's Football News. Search that in the toolbar. We're going to the AFC now, where had a very interesting situation going into Sunday's action with four teams alive, none of them controlling their own destiny. Now keep that in mind. I heard so many people at the bar on Sunday say, oh, the Ravens had, you know, all they needed to do was win and they were in. No, that's actually not true. The Dolphins couldn't have won and in two either. They both needed help. But I will say this. I didn't see the entire Baltimore or the entire Miami game. Actually, I have the Miami game in the DVR. So at some point this week, I'll go back and watch it. But I didn't get to see either one of those games in their entireties. But I think the fans of those teams and the players will go back or are thinking about it now and are saying, well, what we really needed was for the other to lose. You know, if you're a Miami fan, you needed Baltimore to lose. If you're a Dolphin fan, you needed Baltimore to lose. So, and those happened. Those happened for you. The other team lost, but you lost too. So I think they can both point to themselves and say what they needed help with happened. So in essence, looking back at it now, it was a win and get in situation. Although if they both won, then it wouldn't have been. But that's besides the point. The fact that both these teams lost, I think it just sums up the season. You know, both these teams, I think at some point, and it was late in the season, just a couple weeks ago. And actually, both these teams in the last 5 weeks or so beat Pittsburgh, which had an outside shot of making it if both these teams lost. And when that happened at 1 o'clock, Pittsburgh was in line to get in ahead of these teams. You know, which was the ironic thing, I think, that although, and that's what I said at the beginning of the show, although Pittsburgh didn't really eliminate Baltimore, didn't eliminate Miami, it was their win that knocked them off the in-the-hunt list that CBS had on all day. Because if Pittsburgh would have lost, then Pittsburgh would be off. And actually, I think Baltimore eliminated themselves with their loss, but I think Miami still had a shot if San Diego won, because if San Diego lost, sorry, because the four-team tiebreaker, I guess, Miami would have had the better conference record at 8-8. But anyway, just so many scenarios we're going through right now. It gets very confusing. But I think at the end of the day, the fact that Miami wasn't able to get a home victory against the Jets, I mean, that's just terrible. The Jets not playing for anything. You whooped them a couple of weeks ago in New York, and you're not able to get a win in a scenario where if you win, you're more than likely in the playoffs and you're at home. I think about the last 2 weeks for Miami, too. You're sitting at 8-6 after you were 5-6, and that was actually that week when they were 5-6 was the week they got that big win at New York. Then they went to Pittsburgh and got a big win, and then they got an upset win against New England. And then you can't beat Buffalo or New York in the last 2 weeks, and you score a whopping 7 points combined in the two games? Come on, man. All right, you don't deserve the playoffs. Right when we were saying that Ryan Tannehill was playing at a, I don't want to say elite level, most cliche thing ever to say a quarterback's playing elite in the NFL, but he was playing at a high level. I mean, I would even argue that maybe he was playing better than Andrew Luck at this point, but I wouldn't argue that anymore. Man, I mean, what a horrible way to end the season. And now I think the questions all rise. Well, did the incognito thing catch up to the Dolphins? What happened with Tannehill at the end of the season? The four game losing streak in the middle of the year. What would you have done differently? I mean, all the questions come up now. All those names they signed in the offseason too, the Mike Wallaces and and the big names they brought in ultimately just led to a very average 8-8 year where they missed the playoffs. For Baltimore, you know, again, same with Miami, just a lot of mixed feelings. I mean, this was a team that in the middle of the year didn't look like they really deserved to be in the playoffs. And then they go on a 4-game winning streak, and you're like, okay, typical Baltimore. They're getting it done when it matters most. And they're going to go on a run here and maybe be a really dangerous team in January. Well, last week, they just lay a stinker at home to the Patriots. I'm not saying that they should have won the game, but the worst loss in the John Harbaugh era, personally, it was the worst game I've ever seen the Ravens play, going all the way back to the late 90s with Brian Billick. It was just awful. 41-7 final. And then, I mean, to go on the road against Cincinnati, although it was kind of a meaningless game for them, they did have some seeding implications on the line. You can't count on getting a win in Cincy this year. I mean, they were 8-0. Perfect record there, so I wasn't holding my breath for Baltimore to win that game. And they got routed. I mean, it was close, but ultimately Flacco threw too many interceptions in that one, and the team lost by 17. I think ultimately the defense played decently, although they gave up 41 and then 34 points in the last 2 weeks. The defense played better than that scores indicate. I don't think the problem was on defense, especially in the New England game. The Patriots got two scores on their defense in the last 2 minutes of that game. So really it was around a 28-7 game. It was the offense that was the issue. And you can't put it all on Joe Flacco's hands, but that's a big part of it. But ultimately I think it was the offensive line is what led to the demise of Baltimore, unable to protect Flacco enough. He threw three interceptions in the Bengal game. He had two the prior week against New England. And they can't get a running game going. Again, in this one, I mean, they didn't even try, really. Bernard Pierce, 5 carries, 28 yards of a decent average. He had a 14-yard run. That was half his yards. Ray Rice, 6 carries, 15 yards. You run Ray Rice 6 times? I know he's had a bad season, but come on. Drop Flacco back 50 times. That's not going to get it done. You got to have some kind of balance, even in today's NFL. And that was pretty apparent that Baltimore did not have that, and they didn't have good pass blocking or run blocking down the stretch. So I expect Baltimore to try and bolster that offensive line and get younger on the defensive side of the ball this offseason. The other potential wild card team playing at 1 o'clock on Sunday was the Steelers. They took care of business. They got it done against Cleveland, 20-7. Not a perfect game for Big Ben Roethlisberger in this one. Threw 2 interceptions. But I think what was kind of evident to me watching the game was Big Ben was taking his shots down the field. And it was a rainy, probably cold day in the Berg, so and not the best day to take your shots down the field, but he was throwing it down the field, which under the Todd Haley offense has been a little less prevalent in the Steelers' playbook. But Roethlisberger taking his shots, and I think that's really what led to the 2 interceptions. Also, some poor decision making and some bad throws by Ben, a little uncharacteristic this season. But ultimately, I think the Steelers down the stretch played very well. And of those three teams, they were the ones that really deserved it the most. Even though they were 8-8, same record as Baltimore and Miami, and the Dolphins and Ravens beat the Steelers just a few weeks prior, I think the fact that they were 0-4 was really when the Steelers were really, really bad. And they finished the season on an 8-4 run. Actually finished the season the second half at 6-2 because they started the season 2-6. So to get to 8-8, I think the Steelers and Pittsburgh fans have to be pretty not satisfied, but pretty proud that their team was able to bounce back and not give up on a year like a lot of other teams would do and tank for a draft pick. But the team that ultimately got the sixth spot in the AFC was the San Diego Chargers. And a really interesting scenario, because at 4 o'clock was when the Chargers played, 4:30, against the Kansas City Chiefs backups, which just threw another wrench into this. But San Diego knew that they were still alive. And I think, which was interesting in a way, because obviously, I mean, Pittsburgh needed all three of these teams to lose. So they needed, in this scenario, with the schedule, San Diego was going to know that winning they're in, which I thought was a disadvantage for Pittsburgh, but that was the only way it was going to go down for them and get into the playoffs. It was kind of unfortunate that all four games couldn't have been at the same time. That would have made it really interesting. But going into the game, San Diego knew a win and they're in. They didn't need any other help. And Kansas City knew that as well, but they still played a lot of backups. But their backups played really well. And if it wasn't for a missed field goal from Ryan Succop at the end of regulation, a very makeable field goal too, around 39 yards, Chiefs would have won this game with their backups, and it would have been the Steelers at 8-8 getting the sixth spot. But San Diego was lucky that the Chiefs missed that field goal, and San Diego got a field goal in overtime and held the Chiefs to no points on their drive. So San Diego at 9-7, they are actually the third team from the AFC West going to the playoffs. It's only the third time since the restructure of the divisions with the four, you know, the North, South, East, and West. Only the third time that three teams from the division, from the same division, are going to the playoffs in the same year. So that's pretty interesting. The last time actually was just 2 years ago with the AFC North: Steelers, Ravens, and Bengals. The Bengals making their third straight playoff appearance. That's something that I don't think's ever happened in their franchise history. So pretty exciting stuff there for the Bengals. Actually, this is an interesting trivia question. This is the first time since 1999 that the Steelers and Ravens have both missed the playoffs in the same season. Wow. It's also the first time that John Harbaugh and Joe Flacco have missed the playoffs since being in that purple and black in Baltimore. Their first year was in 2008, so they had a five-year streak of making the playoffs that snapped this year. But that stat with Pittsburgh and Baltimore making one of the two teams in a lot of years, both of them making the playoffs every single year starting in 2000 and not making it for the first time, was pretty incredible. You have to go all the way back to the AFC Central before the AFC North was even established to the last time both those teams missed the playoffs. So I want to point out a couple of articles that you can read more about these four games. The Kansas City Chiefs San Diego game, written by Natalie Falk. Chargers rebuffed the Chiefs in OT for number six seed. Five things that we learned. Pretty good piece by Falk. She is a new writer, I believe, at Football Nation. I did a little bit more research into her because I think this is the second week in a row now that she's one of the articles that we feature here on the show. She's relatively new writer on Football Nation. She has 35 articles, and she really writes some good stuff. And on her profile, she says she is a San Diego Charger fan. So congratulations to you, Natalie. Your team is going to the postseason. Of course, you're going into Cincinnati where they are undefeated this season, so it could be a rough first game. And the other one, other article I wanted to reference here, Gareth Brown, the author, Baltimore Ravens at Cincinnati Bengals, Five Things That We Learned. So if you want to read more about Baltimore missing the playoffs for the first time since 2007, check out Gareth's article here on our website. We're going to take a break. Hey, I know Christmas and the holidays, except for New Year's, is over, but I still like listening to Christmas music. So here's another one from Christmas, and then we'll be right back with the 14-minute segment.
I'll say we are.
Yeah, let's sing it now.
Okay, Simon?
Okay.
Okay, Theodore?
Okay.
Okay, Alvin? Alvin? Alvin!
And we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. I'm your host, Dave Holcomb. It is now time for the fourth and long segment. We got four statements here for you today. If you've never listened to the show, this is the part where I say a statement and I'm going to either agree, grunt on fourth and long, or punt it away and disagree. For the first statement, we're going to go right back to the last game we were just talking about, the Chargers and Chiefs. The Chiefs sat most of their starters in this game, and I think there's a lot of discussion about whether that was the right thing to do for them, whether they should they sit their starters and possibly be rusty next week? Should they play their starters and risk injury? Should they try and win the game and help the Steelers get to the playoffs? Well, what's the right thing to do? Well, so my statement. The Chiefs had the right to rest their starters in Sunday's game, and I'm grunting all the way. Andy Reid and the Chiefs have the right to do whatever they want. It was a situation where nothing can benefit them with a win, and nothing hurts them with a loss. So they were actually the only team out of the 18 that were alive for the playoffs. They didn't have anything to play for. I mean, even the Seahawks had to win and wrap up home field advantage. So did the Broncos. I mean, every team could have moved up or moved down with a win or a loss, except for the Chiefs. They were locked in at the 5 seed in the AFC. So they had the right to rest their players if they chose to. They are in the playoffs. They've the job well done. If you want to make sure no one is, no one's injured for next week, yeah, go ahead, rest them. I have a problem, though, if teams then just give the game away and don't try their hardest with their backups. It was very clear that even on the road, even with backups, Andy Reid wanted to win this game, and the Chiefs wanted to win this game. When Ryan Succop missed that field goal, Succop was upset, and so were the Chiefs. They wanted to win. And that's really nice to see that even a meaningless game, the Chiefs were trying to win all the way through into overtime. Yes, they didn't give it their all because they didn't play their starters. But I think, I'm talking to Steeler fans here, Steeler fans really couldn't have asked for anything more from the Chiefs and their players and their coaching staff. Pittsburgh fans, if any of you are upset about this, I think that's a little ridiculous. You were very lucky to be alive in the last week of the season. And then you were extremely lucky to be alive at 4:30 on the last week of the season because three things had to happen at 1 o'clock, and they all did. So, yes, I know that you were a very makeable field goal away from a playoff appearance, and that stinks that it didn't happen. But it was... all I can say is it wasn't meant to be. If you don't want to, if you want to make the playoffs, beat the Raiders in week 6 of the season. Beat the Vikings in week 3. Don't lose to Miami when they come to your place in the snow in Pittsburgh in December. There are plenty of spots in the regular season that the Steelers could have pointed to and said that's where we could have picked up a game and finished 9-7. In that case, they would have made the playoffs because they had a better conference record than the Chargers. So, it's real simple. If you beat the Raiders, you're in. If you beat the Vikings, you're in. Beat the Dolphins, you're in. I mean, you can't have it all come down to, we need this team to win and this team to win and this team to win. I mean, at some point, we harp all season long about controlling your own destiny. It's true. It's very important. So I am siding with the fact that the Chiefs did nothing wrong. Resting their stars, I think, was the right move. and they will be fresher and healthy for next week's game against Indianapolis, who, by the way, they just lost to. And they didn't do the Steelers a disservice by rolling over and losing 30-0. They had this game, and they gave it their all, falling just short with the guys that were on the field. My next statement, going back to the NFC, to a team that has struggled lately but won in big fashion to clinch a wild card spot. They actually are the sixth seed in the NFC. That's the New Orleans Saints. And they will be going to Philadelphia for the wild card round next week. My statement, the Saints are upset to see Philadelphia win Sunday night and not Dallas. I'm definitely agreeing with this one as well. It's, I think, interesting to think about, although it's completely hypothetical. The Saints would have much rather played the Cowboys in this one, in this game. Just for the fact that the Cowboys play inside and on a turf that where the Saints can run their normal offense and feel kind of at home. Not to mention, the Saints killed Dallas, setting a record for the most first downs in a game earlier this season, although it was in the Superdome, but still, really similar field conditions in Dallas as they are in the Superdome. So I think the Saints really got unlucky with Philadelphia winning that game, because now they have to go on the road to a team that plays outside. It's going to be cold in January, maybe snowing. I mean, just a few weeks ago, we had that big blizzard in Philadelphia. How would you like to see Drew Brees try to throw and move the offense in that? That would be just a nightmare for Saints fans. So, no doubt about it, I think the Saints would have much rather played Dallas because of the matchup, you know, defensively and offensively. I think the Saints are a better team than Dallas. Maybe still a better team than the Eagles, but I think they would have rather played Dallas. And field conditions would have been a huge advantage for New Orleans, but now they have to go and play in Philadelphia. Now, looking at the other three games as well, in addition to the Saints and Eagles game, in my mind, this is very interesting because, at least in the NFC, I mean, the wild cards are, in both scenarios, have better records than the two teams hosting the playoff games in the division round. In the AFC, you have the Colts, who have rallied to an 11-5 record, and the Chiefs, even though they started the season 9-0, they have fallen to 11-5, so those teams' records are identical. And then you have San Diego, who's a hot team at 9-7, barely sneaks in, going into Cincinnati, where they are undefeated at home and are 11-5 on the season. So my statement with this one, three of the four road teams will win wild card weekend. I'm going to hold up here and disagree. I think Cincinnati is going to win. So that is one home game that I'm predicting the home team to win. I think San Francisco is going to win. So right now it's 1-1. I'm going with Cincinnati and San Francisco. So in order for three of four to happen, Kansas City's got to win in Indianapolis, and New Orleans has to win in Philly. I don't see both of those happening. I think the one that's more likely to happen is Kansas City. I know a lot of people are doubting Kansas City right now. They had a bad end of the season. Really, when you think about it, they lost three of their last five games after starting 9-0. Actually, wait a minute. They lost five of their last seven games after starting 9-0, finishing 11-5. So, yeah, it's been a really disappointing November and December. But I just think something is going to go right for the Chiefs. They played really well with their backups. I know their backups aren't going to play, and I know that has no bearing on this game coming up with Indianapolis. But I just think they're going to be fresh, and they're going to have confidence going into that matchup. And just losing to the Colts, I think, will be an advantage, actually. They're going to make their corrections. Even though that game was at Arrowhead and this one's going to be on the road, As of right now, on Monday morning, although I reserve the right to change my mind later, I am going with Kansas City winning that game. But I think at home I'm going to go with Philadelphia over the Saints. I mean, the Saints have been a very different team on the road than at home. It's going to be outside in the weather. So that to me, I will be surprised, I'll say, if three of the four road teams win. Interesting question. I think it's possible, but I'll be surprised. I'm looking at probably around two of the teams on the road winning on this coming weekend, Saturday and Sunday games. We're going to throw in a fourth statement here in our fourth and long segment. We're assuming or expecting a bunch of coaches to be fired this week on Black Monday, as it's called, the Monday after the regular season ends. As of this recording, the only head coach to be fired besides Gary Kubiak from a couple weeks ago, Rob Chudzinski, the head coach from the Cleveland Browns, fired after his first season with the team. My statement: the Cleveland Browns made the right move in firing Chudzinski. It's really hard to say whether it's the right move, but since I posed the question, I'm going to say no, it's not, and I'm going to punt it away. I just don't understand where this team is going. You trade Trent Richardson. This is a team that 2 years ago they drafted Brandon Weeden, a 27-year-old rookie. You have Trent Richardson, a franchise running back. You trade him away. You draft Brian Hoyer, and then you have Brian Hoyer, and he gets injured. Chudzinski is a guy that you've been coveting, supposedly, and it looks like the team has some promise. And then you end the year on a really bad losing streak. You lost seven straight to end the year. Actually, you lost 10 of 11 to end the year. And then you fire your head coach. Well, my next question is, since Chudzinski's gone, is North Turner going to be promoted? Or is he gone too? Because it's probably going to be rare if they bring in a new coach and he doesn't want his own offensive coordinator, especially if they bring in an offensive coach. He's going to want his own playbook. So that to me means that North Turner might leave, which means really this team is starting all over again. And how many times are you going to start all over? This was a team that halfway through the year showed promise. Can you really blame Chudzinski for losing that many games when you have Jason Campbell and Brian Weeden playing quarterback? I know that, again, if you look at the schedule, they lost 10 of 11 to end the season. But I don't really know what else you wanted from this team. They were in games. They almost beat New England on the road. They should have. And they were in the game against New York. They were in the game against Chicago. They were in the game against Jacksonville. Ultimately, yes, a loss is a loss. A win is a win, and you lost. But I just don't know what else you wanted from him in his first season with the players that you've given him. Next year, with all the draft picks that the Browns have, and Brian Hoyer is quarterback, and maybe he's a step up from Campbell and Weeden, this team could be 8-8, 7-9, and or even push for a winning record. It's possible. But starting all over again, I don't see what that solves. I don't see who wins in that. That's why they're the Browns. That's why I really don't think they'll be any good soon. Until they get some stability in the ownership and in the head coaching position, offensive coordinator, and their staff, and they get a franchise quarterback. You know, it's like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, what do you need first, a stable head coach or a franchise quarterback? Well, that's a tough question, but I don't see how you can blame Chudzinski for the season that he had when he has the players playing quarterback that he does. End of story. We're going to take a break. You know, the owner from the Cleveland, Jimmy Haslin, you know, I would argue that maybe he's the Grinch, firing Chasinski when he shouldn't. Here's a song for him.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
And we're back here on Football Nation's Monday Morning Huddle. Your host, Dave Holcomb. One last article I want to reference before we call it a show. We discussed that, the first firing, really, from Black Monday, the Black Sunday, maybe, in Cleveland. Bobby Ranagi, sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, Bobby, over the weekend, he kind of gave a preview of the five coaches that he's expecting to be fired. Rob Chasinski was not on his list. I don't think he was on many journalists' lists. But so Bobby gives you five coaches that he believes will be fired. We'll keep a close eye on that in the next week and make sure that's a part of our shows going forward, in addition to all of the playoff coverage we're going to have in the next 4 or 5 weeks. Actually, 5 weeks. Five episodes left here in Season 2 of Monday Morning Huddle. And actually, we're hoping to hit 10,000 views on the show. We're up to over 8,000. And if we average around 250 per episode in the last six, including this one, we'll get over that 10,000 mark. So that would be absolutely fantastic. After last year, we had 5,000 listens. So we would be close to doubling the listenership for this year. So please help us out, retweet the show, tell your friends to listen, and just try to get the word out there. Thank you very much to all the listeners out there every week. Don't forget, you can tweet at me, DMHOLCOMB. You can also send me an email, holcombmdavid@gmail.com. I want to hear what you guys think. You can also find me on Facebook at Dave's Football News. One last article I want to mention that myself and Cooper Allen wrote over the weekend. We picked our MVPs on offense and defense and our rookies of the year and coach of the year. All of us, both of us, picking a player for each category in an article that came out over the weekend. So I encourage you guys to check that out as well. That was part of our First and 10 series. So for everybody that's still involved, their team's still involved in the playoffs, good luck in wildcard weekend. If you're on a bye, enjoy it. If you're not playing at all because your team's eliminated, enjoy the stress-free weekend and just enjoy watching the NFL playoffs. And of course, everybody, have a happy, happy new year. May you have good tidings in 2014.
Thank you, Frank. Don't mention it, Marvin. And I also want to thank all you out there for watching. Please remember the moral of tonight's show. Put your troubles away till tomorrow. If you're lucky, someone will break into your house tonight and steal them.